little bit later this evening, we're going to do a slightly amended version of the Festival of Light. The Festival of Light is the ritual that we do every Sunday. Most of you, many of you, have heard that. The Festival of Light is about the descent of the avatar into human form for the sake of uplifting all of us, more than uplifting, for the sake of freeing us from those strange misunderstandings that we all have that cause us to look in all the wrong places for happiness. It's kind of a cliche to say that, looking for love where it's not going to be found. I was talking to a friend of mine earlier today, and we were talking about her family and various things and each of her offspring, where they are now, and it was so interesting. Each one of them is doing well. Many conditions in their life are wonderful, except for the parts that aren't, you know, except for the awful aspects that have sort of come along with everything that is wonderful. And I know I often get complaints from people that say, life is really beautiful. Why do you always talk about the suffering? Well, it's because life is so beautiful that it's really possible to talk about suffering, because otherwise it would make us too sad and no one would want to come. The story of the Festival of Light is the rescue from the fact that there's always something wrong unless our lives are really centered on God. And there's parts of lines in there which are so beautiful. A prayer of love went up from earth and you responded. A ray of your light flashed out from the heart of infinity, burst downward through night skies of consciousness, and was born on earth for the redemption of mankind in human form. Listen to that. Earlier in the festival it says, from the hearts of creatures everywhere, from the hearts of mankind and creatures everywhere, goes up in wordless yearning a prayer for redemption. Every single week when I say that phrase, wordless yearning, what does that really mean? You see, we're so enamored of our thoughts, and we're so persuaded that what we think and what we say is who we really are. In Autobiography of a Yogi, when Sri Yukteswar was advising Yogananda, who was then just a new disciple, among the pieces of advice he gave was, try to hear behind the confusion of men's words what they are really trying to say. Now, Sri Yukteswar was a divine avatar, and he was training Yogananda in the same line of work, which was to free souls from delusion. And Sri Yukteswar was saying, who people think they are and what they think they're doing is just the tiniest little surface, just a little painting on the surface of what we're really here for. So we go about our business according to sort of the karmic group that we end up being born into. And we run our little story. Years and years ago, David and I were in Houston, Texas, and we had just finished a long lecture tour, and we had a little free time before we had to go home. And we went to visit the NASA campus there. And I've been part of a karmic group since my early adulthood, since I had my early 20s. I came to Ananda, I met Swami Kriyananda, I sort of found my people, so to speak. And I walked onto the campus of NASA, and I had this just such a strong feeling, oh my gosh, this is a whole different ray. This is like all these people who came to take us to the moon or take us to Mars, and they were born from the astral world just as eagerly, you know, to get to NASA headquarters in Houston and get us all to the moon just as eagerly as I was born to get to Ananda Village and try to get us all to God, you know? And everywhere you go, everybody's in some little vortex of energy. I always think about it when I see something like rodeo riders. And I think there's families and families of rodeo riders and the women who love them, you know? And this, the whole entire story just plays itself out. And then we finish that one and we go off to be, you know, ballet dancers. Or friends of ours who lived here for a while were very prominent national ballet dancers. And the woman especially, she'd been dancing since she was 3 years old. And there was just, it was so fun to talk to her because she just assumed that I'd been dancing since I was 3 years old too. And everything in her world was ballet. And it was all so familiar to her, just as familiar as my little karmic group is. And so in this way, you see, incarnation after incarnation, we play out all these different things, trying to find the situation in which nothing terrible intrudes. You know, the one place where it's all going to be just right. But underneath that, this is what we're saying in the Festival of Light. From the hearts of mankind and creatures everywhere goes up in wordless yearning a prayer for redemption. That word redemption is a very odd and interesting word. What we're asking to be is like someone once said, you know, it's not like we're green stamps. Remember green stamps that you would redeem them for prizes? You know? But we are someplace where we don't entirely belong. And we work very hard to make a nest for ourselves here. We get little bits of string and fluff, and we sort of get a little spittle, and we stick it all together and try to make a little nest. But in the midst of all of this, there's this other part of us that remembers that I descended from divinity. And even though I'm working hard to recreate the heaven I remember, this isn't the heaven I remember. Swami Kriyananda, born with such an elevated consciousness, in his childhood, until he was almost 9 years old, he always had this odd impression that the world that he was looking at was much less distinct to him than the inner world that he lived in. And even as a child, every night when he would go to sleep, he would shut his eyes and this enormous light would appear. And that light would expand and expand, and then he would enter that light. And he thought everyone did that. He was older in his childhood before he found out that wasn't how everyone lived. And gradually, he tried to make an effort to relate to this world, much to his misery, until he came full circle and found his master. Because you see, a prayer of love went up from earth, and it goes up from the heart of every one of us, because we know deep inside ourselves that perfect bliss is our true nature. I was just watching myself just even today, and aware of the fact that on one level, this current of happiness just plays out. I mean, how could we not be happy? We've found a spiritual path. Many of us have become disciples. We've found a doorway through. When I first came to this spiritual path, when I first met Swami Kriyananda in 1969, it was like all of a sudden everything just clicked like this. I was exactly the same person, but all of a sudden there was a solid, fixed point in this ever-changing world, because there was an example in front of me of perfect bliss. And so the dream of my heart suddenly became grounded in a real possibility. And that's the wordless yearning, whether we're building rockets to go to the moon, whether we're dancing on the stage of Carnegie Hall, whether we're back to the land and farming and milking goats. It's all this wordless yearning that says, who am I? Where do I belong? Where is my home? And that prayer of love, a prayer of love went up from earth, and you responded, the divine responds, and says, all right, I'll come down among you, and I'll live in the world that you live in, and I'll have a human body, and I'll have a mother and a father, and I'll have friends, and I'll have challenges, and I'll have things happen to my body, and people will betray me and break my heart. Just all the things that we have to live through. But the divine in human form shows us how to take every one of those experiences and turn them toward our true aspiration. And so here we are, Christmas Eve, 2,000 years more since that prayer of love came down and you descended and took human form. It goes on to say, many times has that light descended, drawn to earth by the call of aspiring love. Why do we celebrate this over and over again? It has two realities. One is the baby Christ grows into the man, the infinite Christ. And so the baby Christ within us, that little bit of wordless yearning, finds its way and grows within us into the infinite Christ. I offer the little self that is in me into thy infinite light of spirit. And the other side of it is that God literally is rescuing us. You know, how many people, even now, you pick up the Bible and you read it again and again and again, and you can study the words for their intellectual meaning, or you can just read it again and again because you're in touch with a power that has the capacity to dissolve our delusions. Swamiji was speaking about, the Master was speaking about himself in a letter that he wrote, or words that he said, I don't recall. But he said, Yogananda said, God has given me the power to dissolve your delusions. Isn't that what we feel like we need? Because we have these wrong ideas, and I know all of you are just like me. You get this understanding, and it's so clear. I'm completely content within myself. What more do I need? And then a day passes, 2 days pass. We find ourselves shopping and longing for things, and somebody speaks unkindly, and we snap back at them, and then all of a sudden we're aware of a certain kind of anxiety growing within us, and we say, how did I fall into this again? Where did this come from? With our minds, we can speak so clearly, but it's so deep within us that it's impossible to extricate ourselves without that descent of grace. And that's what these avatars are to us. They are the living descent of grace. They are the clear window where we can look into that life, we can look into that consciousness, we can look into that teaching, and all of a sudden our consciousness goes with that soul, goes with that master into the realm where he lives. And they take away from us, in ways that is impossible for us to understand, all this karmic burden. And so the little baby Jesus comes, and you know, when he did come, a few noticed. And that's the beautiful story that we act out, you know. The angels coming and the kings coming and the shepherds coming. And we sing about those glorious occasions. And there's so much beautiful music and so much beautiful poetry has been written about it. But we celebrate it now because we know what this human form has to offer us. You know, on our altar now we have that powerful picture of the Christ at the end of his life. You know, it's taken from the Shroud of Turin, supposedly the impression left by Jesus' face on the winding sheets when he ascended. Whether or not any of that is actually true, it doesn't matter. It's an artist's picture of the power. And the power is right there in the baby. And we celebrate the baby because we know the gift. Greater can no love be than this, it says in the Festival of Life. Greater can no love be than this, from a life of infinite joy and freedom in God, willingly to embrace limitation, pain, and death for the salvation of mankind. Such ever has been the sacrifice of the great masters for the world. And you see, it's universal. Here's this extraordinary story. Jesus lives, he's born in the manger, he grows up to be this powerful figure, he dies on the cross, he's resurrected. It's the greatest story ever told. And it's so massive. But you see, the other side of it, Swami says to us, infinity implies also infinitesimal. That the tiniest little aspect, the grain of sand, the sparrow, the grain of sand, falls not without my sight. In other words, God is intimately aware of everything. And that means he's intimately aware of you and of me. Sister Gyanamata, Master's dedicated disciple, said, she wrote in a letter to Master, one of the most touching letters ever written. She writes, she said, "I know, sir, that you came at the behest of Jesus and Babaji, that you have this mission to show how East and West unite, how the Bible and the Bhagavad Gita are the same teaching. I know all of these things. But I like to think that you came just for me." And this is what the baby gives us. Because there's the baby, and when you are there with a baby, and the baby has this childlike, this childish child enthusiasm. You know, children are just right there. When you're in front of a baby, the baby doesn't think, oh, there's a lot of adults in the world and this is just one of them. You know, the baby just thinks, oh, there you are. You know, and there's no one in the world except that intimate relationship, the mother, the father. Even if it's not your own baby, you just take that baby and you just look into its eyes and all that's there. That intimacy is teaching us. That's why he takes human form. That's why he comes as a baby and a child, because he wants to teach us how intimate this relationship is. This is not something that happens way over there or here and big tones and loud voices and all this sort of thing. This is the intimacy of a mother and her baby nursing at the breast. How can you be closer than that? And it's hard for us to get our minds around God being the baby and us being the mother. But you know, that's one of the classic bobs, that you take God as your child. It's not presumptuous. It's the ultimate in selfless love. You know, the mother gives her own body to make the baby, feeds the child from her own body, would happily and willingly die for the sake of the child. You see, what greater image, what less intimidating image is there, you see? That's what God wants from us. He doesn't want us to be seeing him. If people behave toward God as if it makes him proud to have us love him, you know, makes him sad to have us love him like that. What he wants is for us to be as close to him as a mother is to her child, or as the baby is to its mother. Because you see, this is everything to us. These masters come for one reason. A prayer of love went up from earth, and you responded. Your prayer, my prayer, he comes for us. And all through this evening and this whole time of Christmas, claim him as your own. Don't worry, he's everywhere. In the beautiful story of Krishna, all of these different stories about the masters, the women of the village all loved Krishna, every one of them, and the gopis, they were called, and they would leave their families and leave their responsibilities and run to the forest to dance with Krishna. And on the full moon night, they went for what's called the Rasa Lila. Rasa, it means sweet. Lila means dance. The sweet dance. And the way the story is told, all the women in the village came, and they were all dancing in the moonlight. And every one of them was dancing with Krishna. Krishna made himself as many as there were. And each one of them thought they were the only one there, dancing only with him. That's how we should love God. That there is no reality. Our wordless yearning has been answered. God has incarnated. Yes, in this physical body, but above all, he's incarnated in our consciousness. He is our father, mother, friend, beloved, our very own child. And we are to him all of those things. Only one thing keeps him at a distance: our unwillingness to receive him. But we can break that. God himself will break that delusion. That's what we pray for. Lord, take away from me everything that keeps me from loving you as I can.